You're listening to Inner Demons, the comic book podcast based on Marvel's very own spirit of vengeance, Ghost Rider. From Johnny Blaze and Danny Ketch to Robbie Reyes, Alejandra, and more, this is the best place for news, reviews, and discussion. And now, here is your host on this fiery road to hell, Brian Biggie. Let's ride.
Welcome, Flameheads, to the newest episode of Inner Demons, the Ghost Rider podcast. As always, I am your vengeance-fueled yet lovable host, Brian Biggie. I'm here with another jam-packed episode of Ghost Rider goodness, so buckle up and stay tuned. On tonight's episode, we have a bunch of really great reviews, starting with Ghost Rider 11 and 12 by Ben Percy, and then moving on to Cosmic Ghost Rider by Stephanie Phillips, issues 1 and 2. Then we're going to take a little time machine to the past and review some classic issues, Ghost Riders 27, from the 2000s, the 90s, and the 70s. First up, right now, there's not a ton of Ghost Rider news at the moment. A lot of us are looking towards San Diego Comic-Con 2023 as of this recording. And haven't heard too much, except for one thing I wanted to mention on the show tonight. For all you Robbie Reyes fans, we actually have some pretty cool news. Funko has a San Diego Comic-Con 2023 exclusive item. It's a Robbie Reyes Midnight Suns-themed Funko Pop figure. So if you're looking towards how he would look in the comic books, typically, you'll kind of be disappointed a little bit. He looks a lot like he does in the video game, with kind of a gold color palette, with the flaming head and the kind of a gold kind of skull a bit. But he looks very cool. He's got a flaming chain as well. So I imagine folks can, get that at the convention, but also online as well. And of course, with those online conventions, with those convention exclusives, if you don't grab them right away, it's kind of the whole fear of missing out. You might have to pay a little bit extra for them down the line, but I just want to give that heads up for all you Robbie Reyes fans. We do not have yet word of a comic accurate Robbie Reyes, but that is pretty cool for all you Midnight Suns fans. Very, very cool. So that's really the news that we have so far for Ghost Rider at the moment. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to hop right into the reviews as soon as we can. So stay tuned, guys. We'll be right back.
I am Connor from the House of El.
And I am Ray from the House of Zod.
We are two of the many, many survivors of Krypton's destruction, and we have made our home in Australia, and dare I say have become Australians, for better or worse. But we have also decided to read Superman comics, read Superman books, watch Superman shows, cartoons, movies, basically everything Superman, and from an Australian perspective as well. Whether you're a seasoned fan, like me,
or whether you are coming in fresh, wide-eyed, and wanting to learn more like me, then this podcast is for you. Join us for our bi-weekly adventures available on all good podcast catchers.
So just search for Last Sons of Krypton, a Superman podcast. We'll be coming to you from Australia or some cosmic dimension, wherever we are that week.
Up, and away!
So first up, the synopsis is the following. After defeating both Blackheart and Exhaust last issue, Johnny is troubled with visions each night of his eventual demise. Talia, however, is still by his side, and she senses something big and evil is brewing. She takes him to bed to ease his mind, but he still dwells on what it all means. They are traveling the country, saving people and hunting things as if they were the Winchester family, but Johnny's bike seems to have an agenda of its own, often hurting people who get too close or outright trying to run over unsuspecting Talia, which happens while they are about to investigate the trail of blood leading to Savannah, Georgia. Blaze realizes he needs to ditch the bike, and right now. He rides into a construction zone, wrecking the satanic cycle, only to discover a corpse of Exhaust inside. They bury his remains under a newly paved road and head to Savannah, which appears to be on fire. Oh, and Talia bites Johnny in a kinky way for about the seventh time this issue. And that's actually where this issue ends. We're going to move on to issue 12 before we talk about our thoughts on the issues. Let's synopsize issue 12 first. This one's called Necropolis. Blaze and Talia drive into Savannah's outskirts, but are stopped and antagonized by stupid cops. Naturally, they're stupid. Johnny Blaze becomes the rider, melts their pistols, and drives off in their cop car. Because, yeah, Ghost Rider no longer has a bike, of course. Talia hypnotizes Sheriff Andy and Barney Fife and follows the Ghost Rider. Ghost Rider passes corpses of human and demons alike. Someone has been here. Someone causing immense destruction and seemingly meting out vengeance. Curious. The rider encounters a dying demon who tells him that the other demons had a sinister truce with the city, but all was ruined by a recent arrival of a Ghost Rider. Also very interesting. The Ghost Rider is attacked by zombies, but defeats them and finds out more of what happened. Talia does a ritual to discover Danny Ketch is responsible, but he may be too far gone. And that's where that issue ends. So guys, yeah, that is the summary of Ghost Rider issue 11 and 12. Some of my thoughts on issue 11 first, some things I liked about it. The art style change is actually decent here by Dave Wachter. Very cool visuals, you know, there's a bike rear view mirror gag, you know, with the skull in there. So that's kind of a nice cover art there. There's some very cool covers for issue 11 and actually 12 as well. I gotta, you know, before I forget, I want to give a shout out to some of the variant covers that are absolutely amazing. J. Scott Campbell, Sabine Rich, Francesco Mobili, Ryan Stegman does a great cover. And even with 12, some really fantastic covers by one of my favorite artists, Dave Raposa. An absolutely stunning rendition of the skeletal Ghost Rider itself. He's kind of a legend when it comes to all these really epic, dark fantasy creatures. So he does an amazing version of the Castlevania characters with both Symphony of the Night and the first Castlevania. Draws all that stuff amazingly. So before I forget, I really want to, you know, put a shout out to that. The variant covers and some of the artwork. Really, really great stuff here. You know, I was, in the course of issue 11, I enjoyed seeing the action flashbacks. Even though it's a little bit brief for me, I do enjoy seeing some of the action of things that they did across the country. But, you know, honestly, it's just one of those things where it's just too little for me at the end of the day. Talking about some things I didn't like about issue 11. There's a lot of mopey dialogue and some freaky deaky female partner equals a weird tone. It's kind of a tone shift between those two things. It's a little bit of kind of a, you know, it's a little bit of a love story. You know, they're into some some kinky stuff, obviously. You know, they're fighting these demons, but they have a little bit of a love affair going on. So and that's fine, but it also doesn't flow too well with the mopey dialogue, because he's really bummed out, Blaze, in these issues, and he's kind of talking about his life and all his troubles and stuff like that. But, you know, right now, even though he's got a lot of crap to deal with, things are pretty decent for him right now. He actually has someone who's by his side for really the first time in ages, especially, you know, a female companionship that, you know, he really hasn't had a lot of over the years. I mean, other than Roxanne, maybe Dixie, a few characters over the years. But Talia has stuck around for more than a couple issues here. She is by his side. We don't know for how long, but she sees through the darkness that he has. And to her credit as a character, she's stuck by him. And she's not just a one-note character. I will say that. You know, I do enjoy some of her interactions. You know, she's obviously got a strong head on her shoulders and plays a little bit out of his league at times. But, you know, it's interesting seeing them do their thing. It has a bit of a supernatural vibe, as in the TV program. You know, they're going across the country and, you know, they have a sweet vehicle. It's kind of a hearse with flames on it kind of thing, you know, and kind of reminds me of the Winchester's Impala, just a little bit. Obviously a different dynamic, clearly, but that's their mission. They're going and protecting people. And as a fan of that program, Supernatural, I did dig that as well. But, you know, the tone, going back to the tone here, the switch back and forth for me doesn't really work. You know, I get what Percy's trying to do, but it doesn't really fully work. Speaking of the internal dialogue, I'm kind of losing empathy for Blaze itself because it's very heavy-handed and it's kind of not believable. I have a difficult time thinking someone would actually say this kind of thing out loud. Some of his stuff, it's very much, it's purple prose. It's something that's, you know, really descriptive, right? Kind of essay writing. It reminds me of kind of a poem, kind of an emo poem a little bit. So that sort of doesn't jive well, too well with me. And I know Blaze is going through a lot, but for me, that's kind of uncharacteristic of his character. I don't remember him being this expressive. Danny Ketch, maybe. You know, he's a different character, a different era, you know, kind of struggling with his inner turmoil there. But, you know, Blaze, I never thought would be that kind of character. So, so it's, you know, this is a Blaze who's very in touch with his feelings. But reads, he, like I said, he reads a little bit like a high school poetry slam by Ben Percy. I'm sick of the kind of the dumb redneck trope that we see a lot, you know, whenever we see, characters get in the mix and, you know, they're written very one note, very one dimensional. Obviously, you know, as soon as those guys got on the bike, you know, they're going to get their fingers chopped off or something bad's going to happen to them. You could just tell they're hicks from the sticks, as designed by the writer here of the story. And even going on to issue 12 as well, you know, if I can clarify about the police thing, it's kind of a long-running trope that even Jason Aaron fell into this trap of having the dumbass cop who is trying to stop Ghost Rider, doesn't really understand, or is trying to stop Blaze, doesn't really know what to do. And it's not really, a good foil for the character. It's just really there to serve a purpose. But, I mean, that just kind of gets old fast, you know. It's just seeing it time and time again. I'm okay with it once in a while, but just seeing it all the time, it's like, oh, here we go. Here's just another moment, you know. This creative team is like, seems like they're trying to be goth and very emo, at times with some of the writing, but there are cases where they miss the mark here. So that's just, you know, that's my take on it. I know a lot of people really enjoy this one, but you know, it's just reading it, just, it's a little bit of a slog to get through, especially when there's less action to balance it out. You know, we pick up the book. The book's not called Johnny Blaze, you know, and his emo adventures. This is Ghost Rider. We want to see him flame on. Kill some monsters, ride his bike, which has basically been missing since about issue 5 or 6, and we just don't get a lot of that. So it's very interesting how it goes. So can anyone out there explain what the hell's going on with the bike? Speaking of the bike and exhaust, did I miss something here? You know, when we last saw exhaust, he was basically getting power punched by the friendship power of Talia and Johnny Blaze. And he just kind of dies, I guess. But now, has he become the bike? Has he been transfigured? Is he inside the bike? It's a very kind of demonic-looking bike. Kind of reminds me of Vengeance's bike, actually. Michael Badalino's motorcycle back in the 90s. It's very skeletal in structure. And almost a little bit like the Johnny Blaze bike from Heaven's on Fire and the Jason Aaron arc. It's very skeletal, very scary. Doesn't even look remotely like a normal bike. It looks right from hell. Which is fine, but what the hell is going on here, guys? What did I miss here? I know sometimes that can be dense sometimes, but what is happening with this bike, with this whole situation? Got exhaust is inside. I don't understand nothing of what's going on. And my biggest issue with that, guys, is it's not. I'm okay with mystery and not having all the answers. That's great. When Ghost Rider stories don't have all the answers, sometimes it can be really powerful. A lot like Wolverine back in the day. You know, we didn't have a lot of the answers back in the day, and he was just a very fascinating, mysterious character. Right now, we don't have answers because I think it's poor writing. Okay? And I know that sounds like a sin because people love Ben Percy's stuff. He's obviously having great success with the series, and I wish him continued success because a lot of eyes are on the character right now. I think that's fantastic. But when so many pages are dedicated to his internal monologue and thinking about, oh my God, woe is me, I'm so sad, and this and that, you know. What is going on? Why can't they dedicate a page or two explaining what the hell is happening with the plot and the characters and the villains instead of wasting all that time talking about his life and his struggles? I get it, that stuff's important, but you got to have some payoff here, guys. That makes no sense to me. So if any of the listeners out there can explain what happened, what did I miss? Was there a page missing from my issue where he transmogrifies into a motorcycle and then Blaze jumps on? Like, what's going on? Please tell me. At me at Twitter, please, at InnerDemonsGR. I have no idea what the heck is going on. So for that one is a very generous 2 out of 5 flaming skulls for me for issue 11. Moving on to issue 12, it's a little bit better. You know, there's way more stuff I enjoy about this one. Let's talk about it. So Savannah looks like a dangerous demonic place. Props to Smith for the art here. Very, very good art with Savannah's on fire. It looks like a horrific hellscape to be a part of. And really only the Ghost Rider can take it, can really do some damage there. So I really love that. The demonic Hellcop Cruiser. Hey, as much as I want to complain about the police officers being kind of idiots, the Hellcruiser is pretty awesome, I gotta say. It looks pretty amazing. Reminds me of a Road Warrior or Twisted Metal kind of vibe. Very cool stuff. The transformation here is great. He rips the skin off. Much more traditional. Thank you, Corey Smith. I appreciate that. I know I've had some issues with the inconsistency of transformation. Sometimes he melts his form off kind of like in a traditional sense back in the day. And sometimes he busts through his form and Blaze's body is just ripped asunder. And then suddenly his clothes are back later on. Sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes he does. There's been some inconsistencies there. So I appreciate this type of transformation. It's very traditional. I loved it. Very well rendered in art. So great job there for the art team. The Ghost Rider speech pattern. I got to say, guys, the behavior speech pattern, top notch. Really, really old school. Almost like 90s vibe, actually. Kind of talks a little bit like the Noble Kale Danny Ketch version of Ghost Rider. That, for me, is one of the biggest highlights of Ben Percy's entire run. Forget about the gore, the blood and guts on every single page and all that stuff like that. As much as I dislike some of the villains that have come down the pipeline in Percy's run, the fact that they've really made the Rider and Blaze at odds, different identities, is absolutely amazing. So big props to Ben Percy here, right? I know I've said a lot of critical things in the last couple episodes, but that cannot be understated. Even some runs I really enjoy, like Jason Aaron and stuff like that, could not distinguish the Rider from Johnny Blaze. It's just Johnny Blaze up to 11. There's an issue we're reviewing later on this episode where the Ghost Rider just talks like Blaze. He just flat out just talks like Blaze. Like, there's almost no difference. It's just a light switch. Just turn on a light switch and you're a Ghost Rider. I love the fact that this is a different being. It's a different entity that doesn't even trust Blaze. They have a contentious relationship, but they know they have to work together. And that's where I think Ghost Rider really shines. If you guys agree or disagree, let me know on Twitter. I'd love to know what you guys think about that. Do you guys think that's important to Ghost Rider's story? Or it's okay to have Blaze be turned up to 11 as the Flaming Spirit? You guys let me know on Twitter. I'd love to hear you guys hear your feedback on that. But for me, I love it. The fact that they are different identities, they speak totally different, it's absolutely fantastic. So more of that, Percy. Love it. The fight scene in the summertime with the Flaming Cross is outstanding. Very killer art here. I know I've said it before. You know, give him villains to fight. Give him monsters, henchmen, creatures of the night to destroy. And I'm all for it, you know. And I'm cool with, you know, the dramatic dialogue. That's fine. But give him some things to destroy and mete out vengeance. Because what good is a Ghost Rider if he doesn't act on his words? If he's just moping about his frustration in his life? We want to see him actually fight back and actually take some agency in his life and really take the battle back towards the demons and the creatures that are killing indiscriminately across the country. I love to see it. I want to see more of that. I don't want to see Blaze crying as much as kicking ass and taking names. There's a balance, of course. You know, not too much one or the other. Obviously, there's a balance, but I want to see him fighting and doing a great job. And this was a really great example of that. At the end, the Ketch revelation is handled well so far. The flashback is nostalgia bait, but I'll bite. So nice touch there, guys. You know, I'm not shy about admitting that. Cons. I mentioned before some of the dialogue with some of the police officers at the city. The city's on fire behind them, and they're on the outskirts preventing folks from entering in without looting. I mean, from the visuals and the scripts, there's inconsistencies there. You know, it's such a hellscape. It's such like an apocalypse in Savannah that, A, you can't imagine more people getting involved, like the government or somebody to get involved to check out what the hell is going on. This is like a dire situation. There's a lot of death and destruction, if not complete death and destruction. But these cops on the outskirts just stop people from getting in. If those police officers don't want to get in to the battle that's happening in the city, what are they doing preventing people from coming in? It's such like a poorly written scene. Really, really stupid. But I get it. You know, you needed some obstacles before they get into the city. I understand. But, you know, it's just everything is decimated behind them. What it makes no sense. it's welcome having Ketch back in the fold, but I have to say, to play devil's advocate, he's had, and the devil's had many, many advocates, I gotta say. That's two status quo changes for Danny Ketch in the last 2 years, okay? One being the Spirit of Corruption with Ed Brisson's run, and now he's still the kind of the Spirit of Corruption. He has that spirit within him, as shown in more recent issues. But he's now is like this Weapon X version of Ghost Rider. And now maybe that's to kind of tease a little bit of the Wolverine, Johnny Blaze thing down the line this year, where they have the Weapons of Vengeance miniseries that Percy's also writing. But, yeah, I mean, having Ketch have, yes, he's a villain again at this point. He's being mind-controlled basically again at this point. But that's just a lot of changes for the readers to accept. First, he's Spirit of Corruption, and now he's this kind of almost like he has that, but also this kind of green flaming Ghost Rider entity as well with the, you know, the sword and everything. So it's interesting seeing that, but it's a lot to ask for the readers, guys. You know, I can keep up with it, but the casual fan, maybe not so much. You know, especially if you didn't grow up with Ketch in the 90s, you might think he's kind of a stupid character. So we'll see where that goes. This one is a much better issue, in my opinion, and a welcome return to form. I have to say 4 Flaming Skulls out of 5 for Ghost Rider issue 12. I do recommend this one. All right, gang, moving along to Cosmic Ghost Rider issue number 1 by Stephanie Phillips and Juan Cabal. This one is called Dual Identity. We open at a destroyed casino in space. The owner is being hunted by the infamous Cosmic Ghost Rider. He is blasted to oblivion, but a grizzled and seemingly retired Frank Castle wakes up from this weird dream. Or was it a dream? Was it real? He doesn't remember that actually happening, so this is a very strange occurrence. Turns out, Frank Castle is now a maintenance guy, temporarily at a quiet space pub named Marlowe's, run by Axel and her dad, Mr. Marlowe. They have taken him in for a short spell, but don't know much about his mysterious past. An interesting stranger drives into town named Kral Dravid. He is one bad hombre and tracks Castle down to the bar. Kral enters and demands to know where Castle is and pulls a gun on Axe and her dad. Frank shows up and tells the stranger that he's mistaken. Frank takes one of his guns and they have a standoff. Kral blows away Mr. Marlowe as we cut to another Frank, who is surprised by this dream. There's a backup story where Frank is confronted by all the people he's lost over the years, family, friends, and more. Eventually, he discovers it is just a glamour put on by some alien who blames the Cosmic Ghost Rider for his family's murder. And CGR says he doesn't need help being reminded that he does it all himself. That's the backup story, and that's also where this issue ends. Moving on to Ghost Rider issue 2, let's summarize that, and then we'll talk about our thoughts on it. Ghost Rider issue 2 is we open on the ass end of the galaxy, where bounty hunter Monarch Starstalker is offered a proposition by Ambassador Karen of the Shire Empire. They offer 20,000 credits to capture but not kill the Cosmic Ghost Rider. Monarch accepts and is off with his robot Hawk in tow. We cut back to Marlowe's bar where Frank is still in a standoff. Axel is enraged to see her father gunned down in cold blood, takes her revenge on Kral, and stabs him repeatedly with a broken beer bottle. Her and Frank flee. She asks who he really is, and he reluctantly tells her his backstory. Just then, Monarch walks in and injures Axe with his hawk. Frank flames on, but is not yet at 100%. We jump to elsewhere in the cosmos, and another Frank Castle is killing more people indiscriminately. He threatens an Omnian priest and asks about past selves and alternate incarnations due to this vision with this other and more noble Frank Castle. But before killing the priest, he is stopped by Valkyrie, and that's where this issue ends. All right, gangs, so for this one, you know, this is Stephanie Phillips' first run with the Spirit of Vengeance, Cosmic Ghost Rider, and, you know, it's she has a very good start to this series thus far. I like seeing Frank retire, the reluctant Frank Castle, reminiscent of this hero's journey, kind of like the reluctant, you know, to get back into the fold, brought back for almost one last mission as an old-timer sort of thing. You know, it's a bit of a trope, but I do enjoy it. You know, it's nice to see Frank just try to get away from all the carnage that he's caused over the years. And if I'm not mistaken, this is one of the only Frank Castles left in the current Marvel Universe. So All you Punisher fans out there, you can correct me if I'm wrong with that, but he's here to stay for now, and not just that, but there's two of them in these issues, so there's this other more vile version as well. We'll find out more about him in a moment. The art here by Cabal is stellar, by the way. Very vivid in detail, great facial expressions, and you know, when you see the two different Ghost Riders, there is a distinct difference. You know, it seems like the, I'll call him the evil twin, Frank Castle, has a different visual style. He kind of has the eyes that are inside, the pupils in the eyes there. The current Cosmic Ghost Rider doesn't have that, and has a different look to him, so it's a different kind of armor as well. So when you see them together later in the series, they're very distinctly different. They don't have the same appearance, so I'll learn more about that soon. The backup story here at the end does have some pathos here. There's some good stuff. Frank looks really great, it's nice kind of seeing all those, his past, you know, he's kind of confronting that stuff like that. So it's on his mind. You know, this is handled better, I think, than some of the Percy stuff where, yes, he has a lot of crap to deal with. He has a lot of depression and things that he's working through, of course, and regrets in his life, people that he's lost. But he's still doing his thing. That's who he is. That's his mission until he's no more. So this is the Cosmic Ghost Rider, you know. So it's definitely a promising start. Some things I didn't like about these issues. Axel starts off interesting, but is becoming yet another cami from the Revenge of the Cosmic Ghost Rider arc with Dennis Hopeless. For me, Cammy was very annoying in that miniseries. I know fans love her from her past appearances in Marvel, but I didn't have that context. So seeing Cammy, was not really pleased with her character. And the worst part is we don't really know what happened. It doesn't seem like they're picking up on that story. When we last saw them, the Cosmic Ghost Rider was going off in space to try to save her and try to rescue her somehow, and we may never see the outcome of that. So Axel, so right off the bat, she's pretty okay, but you know, if not careful, she's going to become a little bit more of kind of an annoying character, kind of almost like a tag-along who kind of hates the Cosmic Ghost Rider but has to go with him to survive. She definitely has some abilities of her own. She can hold her own in fights and stuff like that, so... So that's interesting, but you know, we'll have to see how she pans out. The pacing, as I said in other episodes, due to the dual nature of this story, the pacing can be off at times. You jump back and forth from the Cosmic Ghost Rider, the real one that we know and love, to this alternate one that's vicious and murdering people, almost like way worse than Frank Castle ever would, kind of thing. It jumps back and forth. Now, it's not as bad as when, you know, in the main Ghost Rider series, you were cutting away in the middle of a battle, and then when they cut back, the demon or monster is dead. That's way worse. That's more egregious of a mistake or a writing problem. But this is, you know, just the dual nature, cutting back and forth. Just when things are getting good, you cut back to kind of the dream, waking up from the dream. So I understand why they're doing it. They want to really kind of have the reader question what's going on. But it is, the pacing makes it a little bit tough back and forth. And after, you know, all the events that happen in here, wouldn't you think Axel would be more distraught at the death of her father and all the things that are happening with the Cosmic Ghost Rider? She doesn't seem to be too fazed by what's going on. Maybe she's in shock, but that's a little, you know, disconcerting as a character. Another reason why I don't like her that much. But overall, like I said, all my criticisms aside, I think this is a very promising start for this miniseries, the Cosmic Ghost Rider miniseries by Stephanie Phillips. Issue 1 has 4 flaming skulls out of 5, and issue 2 gets 3.5 flaming skulls out of 5. All right, gang, moving on to Ghost Rider issue 27 from the 2000s with Jason Aaron. This one is called The Former Things Part 2, Requiem for a Caretaker. The angry trucker attacks Sarah, who beats him unconscious. Hearing Sarah refer to Caretaker as her grandfather, Johnny Blaze drives her to the shack, where they find Caretaker mortally wounded. Caretaker tells Sarah he called her not for rescue, but to assume their family's birthright. And the tunnels underground, where Caretaker houses a library of Ghost Rider journals and a number of interdimensional doorways, Blackout tells Danny Ketch that Blaze has arrived on scene. Danny tells Blackout to delay Johnny and begins setting fire to the tunnels. Caretaker tells Johnny the answers he seeks about Ghost Rider are in the tunnels, but Blackout smashes Johnny into the tunnels with a tombstone and chases him below. Caretaker sends a protesting Sarah below to save their family's knowledge, then dies. When Sarah touches one of the journals, her mind is flooded with the Ghost Rider's complete history. Johnny, as the Ghost Rider, defeats Blackout, then reassumes human form only to see Danny flee through one of the doors. Sarah, her habit exchanged for riding attire and weapons from her grandfather's arsenal, tells Johnny she is the new caretaker and joins Johnny in his pursuit of Danny. Caretaker ascends to heaven, but Zadkiel dismembers his soul and orders the pieces scattered through the afterlife. And that's where this issue ends. So that one is definitely a lot going on with that issue, especially if you have context with these characters, if you have a history reading The Caretaker, reading Danny Ketch, and how Danny Ketch used to be a heroic character. Now he's doing things that are very out of the ordinary. And even Caretaker, Caretaker has a lot of pathos here. Even though when you read him back in the 90s, he was a mysterious character, but also one that a little bit sinister. You kind of didn't know where his allegiances lie back then. So seeing all the things that happen here is pretty interesting. So some things I liked about it. Sister Sarah is a fun character so far. She's well-trained. She can hold her own. But she's also vulnerable and naive at times. You know, that's what I like about her characters. You know, she grows to be very, very powerful. Just as a human, basically. Just a very skilled person. But now she has all the knowledge of the past Ghost Riders. Which, let me just say right off the bat, I love the fact that the lore and the mythology of the Spirits of Vengeance is alive still. Even though the shack is burned down and all these years of books are gone, she touches the book and kind of magically takes in all that knowledge. Now, that may be kind of a deus ex machina, or, you know, kind of a cheap way to salvage some of that, but what other way to bring her all this information about how to help Blaze in his mission is now she knows more than Blaze ever did. In 1 second, she touches the books and she knows all that stuff. So I think she's a very huge component to Blaze's mission all of a sudden. She went from just a random bystander to suddenly the most important person to helping him get vengeance. So I think that's super awesome. The fact that she saves all that history in her mind, in a way, guys, for me, how I interpret that is Jason Aaron here is saying all is not lost. If you were a fan of the 1990s era of the Ghost Rider, things are not lost here. Okay, there's the history of the character. Yeah, even though the books are burning and in the book of Danny Ketch goes up in flames and everything gets exploded, they're not gone forever. You know, there's a way to bring that stuff back. And the fact that the new caretaker, Sister Sarah, now has that information in her mind shows that there is some homage paid to that stuff back in the day. It's not like they're just torn down indiscriminately. You know, this is a character who now can pass on some of that information and knowledge to Blaze and also the readers as well. So that is, I don't know if that's what they intended, but way too much of modern fiction and movies do they just destroy the past, so to speak, just like in the recent Star Wars movies, kill the past if you have to kind of thing. Well, I don't always agree with that, you know, not just because I grew up with the past and those older books, but if those books were successful, if there was something to those stories, wouldn't you want to keep some of that mythology and lore around instead of just completely wiping the slate clean for a new story? I'm all for new tales, new characters. That's great. But pay some tribute to the past as well that laid the foundations for it. Because when viewers or readers get the sense that the content creators don't give a crap about what's come before, I think there's a backlash. And it might not be an immediate backlash, right, guys? Because a lot of these movies and shows have made money. But once the luster, the bloom is off the rose and they've lost their luster, people don't go back to those stories. You know, when they realize that the content creators don't give a crap about what has come before, I think that's kind of a big middle finger to the face of longtime fans. And myself, I won't go into it, but personally speaking, in other realms, other movie franchises and books that I've loved so much, I felt that sense that some of the writers are almost trying to do their own thing so much that they are destroying what's come in the past. And when I sense that, I say, well, that kind of invalidates my fandom a little bit because I was a fan of what came before and looking forward to what was coming next. So that's just something, that's my brief tangent on what is why I appreciate Aaron's decision to have Sister Sarah inherit all that knowledge. Because now I imagine when they're not off fighting demons and monsters, she could be kind of rewriting some of the stories of the Riders. And we're going to learn a lot more about these other Riders very soon, Jason Aaron's run. We're going to learn all about the Riders from all over the globe. Johnny Blaze is not the only Ghost Rider, and he was shocked to find out that information, that there's riders all over the world. Now, some longtime Ghost Rider fans may get pissed off about that, the fact that Johnny Blaze used to be unique. He was kind of a one-off spirit of vengeance, and now suddenly there's a Ghost Rider for every single country in the world, every single religion in the world, and you either love that idea or hate that idea, but it's coming whether we like it or not, and we'll have to see how that goes, you know? So, you know, like I said, you know, there's a lot of referencing deep dives in this Ghost Rider mythology and the lore here. A ton of it, guys. The Book of Noble Kale, Met Badalino. There's stuff all over the walls, just like in previous issues, where it's a love letter to fans and seeing all that stuff. And also seeing where Sister Sarah's going to get all of her weapons and gear for the next bunch of issues. So it's definitely good stuff. Now, I don't know how she really has time to change into that gear when the house is burning down, but that's beside the point. That's one of my things I don't like about this issue. It really didn't make a lot of sense, but I love the fact that they bring out Blackout here. I'm a big fan of Blackout's character, that he nails Blaze and they have a conversation that they don't really fight too much back in the day. They never really paired off as much as Danny Ketchum and Blackout did. So it's interesting seeing these two in combat, and it looked like Blaze transformed just in time before getting hit by the Tombstone. Very good stuff here. You know, I love seeing the doors to other Nexus points, the cemetery, the carnival, hell, the Everglades with the man thing. Great stuff here. And even, you know, there's a joke, the clapper with fangs. Yes, that's a joke. It's a bad joke saying Blackout is just the clapper with vampire fangs. But, you know, it is funny, despite the fact that it's Blaze. It's Blaze talking as the Ghost Rider, which I hate. But, you know, it is a good line, especially if you have a lot of history with Blackout. I did like that. But overall, it's, you know, that part was pretty good. And we get our good Zacuul reveal, finally. I mean, we saw glimpses of his face here and there, especially when we saw the kind of overview of the history of the Riders that Sarah inherits in her mind. You see Zacuul's face in the corner. But now we see much more of a full body shot of him and see what kind of threat he is. This guy is trying to take over the Kingdom of Heaven. This guy wants to be God, and he wants to take over, and the longer he's in the chair of heaven, the more powerful he's going to get, and then he cannot be stopped at all. So that's something that is a pretty big looming threat for me. So I love Zacuul's character. Other fans may not, but I love how vicious he is, and he has a kind of different motivation than Mephisto and all these other characters, so I do love that. So I was going to say the coincidence with Blaze passing through just that exact time is a little bit silly. I know he's heading towards Caretaker to find out answers, but you know, it is a bit of a writer's coincidence that, you know, he's driving through and sees Sarah at the exact moment that he needs to be there. I mean, that's a little bit convenient for the story, but so it's one of the things I didn't like, but I'll let it pass. The art, however, does continue to be highly stylized and angular. A lot of fans do not like Tang Huat's art here. They do not like the style. Everybody seems very lanky and, you know, like I said, pointy, or faces are very angular and stuff like that. So it's divided. A lot of fans are like, you know, I wish it was other art teams on there, Roland Bosky or even old school Texera and Saltares. But, you know, he's doing the best he can. And, you know, some of the art seems a little bit rushed at times as well. But, you know, overall, I didn't hate it. But, you know, I do wish maybe a different artist was on this particular issue. And like I said, you know, I think it's funny that Sarah changed into her new battle gear in the middle of the fire with everything exploding around her, but it is what it is. You have to kind of do that. She can't be fighting in her nun's habit the whole time, but overall, this is a very enjoyable issue for me. It's generally, you know, really, really great. I'm going to have to say it's 4.5 Flaming Skulls out of 5 for Ghost Rider issue 27. All right, guys, so now we're going to be doing Ghost Rider issue 27 from the 90s, and this synopsis is from the Road to Vengeance book, The Unofficial Guide to Marvel Comics Ghost Rider, 1990 to 93, by our good friend and developer of Vengeance Unbound, and this podcast itself, Chris Munn. This issue, Ghost Rider and the X-Men descend deeper into the tunnels beneath New Orleans, hunting for the Brood Queen and the children of the Thieves and Assassins guilds that are being held captive by the aliens. They find the children affixed to the cavern wall, and the X-Men get to work freeing them before the Brood discover their presence. Ghost Rider and Gamma break away from the group to search for the Brood Queen, and Wolverine following behind to join them. Ghost Rider feels Dan Ketch's presence inside his mind and realizes that his human host still lives, just before the three heroes are surrounded by the Brood. Elsewhere in New Orleans, John Blaze is told by the Quentin Carvel, by the psychic Clara, that Ghost Rider is in the French Quarter looking for him. Back in the tunnels, the traitor of the Assassin's Guild confronts the Rider, Gambit, and Wolverine, bragging about all the thieves he has killed. The other X-Men are attacked by a second group of Brood while the children are being rescued, but all the Brood are eventually killed. The traitor assassin escapes when the Brood Queen arrives and attacks the X-Men, but she is dragged to the surface by the Rider using his chain and motorcycle. The Queen tries to tempt the Ghost Rider with the power he felt while being possessed by the Brood, who again attacks Ghost Rider and the X-Men. Blaze arrives and blasts the Queen with his Hellfire shotgun, followed by the X-Men destroying her body completely. Later, the Ghost Rider and Blaze depart from the X-Men while the assassin watches from a nearby rooftop, vowing vengeance on Gambit and the Ghost Rider. And that's where this issue ends. So yeah, so this one, I don't have a ton to talk about this one because it's not my cup of tea, basically. Yes, this is the Ghost Rider issue. It's written by Howard Mackey, art by Ron Wagner. But it's generally, it's trying to almost like steer the story back to the Ghost Rider's going-ons, which at this point, the status quo is highly sensitive. You know, Danny Ketch is not in a good place right now. He's on the verge of his demise. He's barely hanging on. And the Rider fully believes that if he transforms back to Danny Ketch at this instant, he's going to perish immediately. So the Rider is slowly losing a little bit of power each issue, in my interpretation, and it creates a situation where it's kind of a ticking clock. Which is always a good thing, but you know, this detour, I'll say, with the X-Men, for me, is a failure. You know, I love the X-Men in the 90s. I grew up with a cartoon. I read some of the issues. You know, that stuff is great. But the fact that this happens at such a critical time of the writer's history, which to me, I think is very important. You know, after issue 25, Dan Ketch gets his throat ripped out and he's left for dead. Suddenly he's driving through New Orleans. He's having an adventure with the X-Men. And you have two drastically different writing styles from the X-Men series to here, where you have Mackey really focusing on the Rider himself. He's no longer just a background character. In the X-Men 9, I think it was, he's a background character. He's possessed. He's like a Brood Rider, and you know he's not as important as he is here. But conversely, the X-Men are as important. You know, they're just wallpaper in this one, too. They're background characters. The only X-Men that matter are Wolverine and Gambit, which ironically, Mackie and company have done a lot of Ghost Rider team-ups with over the years with Wolverine and Gambit. So the other characters, not so much. Kind of background characters. They have a couple lines here and there. Cyclops, Jubilee. They're just there, you know? So I appreciate the fact that Rider has a little more things to do here. But, I mean, it's like I said, this is not my cup of tea, guys. This is such, and the tone shift from issue 25 to now, it's almost silly that he's gone on this little side quest. Yes, it's to find out more about saving Danny, but it's almost an irrelevant side quest. And if you had taken X-Men issue 9 or Ghost Rider issue 26 out of the equation, I don't think anything is lost, guys. You know, there are many fans who love these issues, but it seems like something that's editorially driven. Maybe someone at Marvel, I wasn't there, maybe said, all right, guys, let's do a crossover this month. Let's have both the X-Men and Ghost Rider crossover. It didn't work, in my opinion, for either issue. I disliked X-Men number 9, and I dislike this one as well. A few things I do like about it, though. Wagner has a few great moments here with his art, especially when we see the three-shot of Ghost Rider, Logan, and Gambit. Great stuff there. The Ghost Rider skins the Brood Queen alive. Brutal. Did not expect that to see that in this comic. I believe Chris Munn said the same thing. He's like, well, that's the thing that happened. Ghost Rider just totally inverted the Brood Queen. And it was fascinating seeing the Brood Queen, obviously very reminiscent of the Xenomorph Queen from Aliens. She took on this skeletal nature, you know, where she's just bones who is active and alive and stuff like that. So in a way, it reminds me a little bit what they're going to be doing with a character called Skinner in a couple of years with the Spirits of Vengeance series. You know, Skinner's, you know, this villain that you could kind of blow off all his flesh and he could still come for you because he's one of Lilith's kids, basically, you know, with his razor sharp claws out of his arms. Fascinating stuff, but, you know, definitely didn't expect to see that here. And honestly, one thing I really liked about it is I'm glad it's over. I'm glad this jaunt into New Orleans with the X-Men is in the past. It's not something I was really looking forward to. And now I remember why. This is not really a great issue. Now, granted, if I was a diehard X-Men reader, this would be a hell of a lot more enjoyable. But just the pacing, the tone shift between both series doesn't gel. Feels like they're written by two completely different companies, let alone different writers. So that fully doesn't work for me. Like I said, it's very derivative of Aliens, of course. Is it an homage? Is it a ripoff? You know, seeing the people kind of, you know, stuck by the brood to the walls. I get it. That's their thing. I know that's kind of their little tip of the hat to the Alien series, which was insanely popular. Even when this came out, Aliens was still pretty popular. People were talking about it and coming out with merchandise and toys and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, it is what it is, but obviously it's very similar. Personally, I just don't care about this Brood storyline at all. As a Rider fan, the big thing of this, it's a big detour from a very important time in Ghost Rider's history. And like I said, this must be something maybe someone at Marvel said, let's bring these two together. It doesn't matter what the characters are doing in their own story. And I think it's maybe fair to say that the X-Men probably fared much better in this situation than the Rider. Because let's face it, the Brood are more of an X-Men villain. And they've tussled with those creatures far more often than the Rider ever did. And some people love the fact that the Rider had his little possessed moment with the alien thing. But like I said last episode, it doesn't really work. He's a spiritual entity being taken over by, you know, a cosmic entity. It sort of is weird. It's like an alien taking over like an angel or demon. Very odd. But like I said, I think the X-Men fared better in this series than the Rider. I'm glad it's over personally. And yeah, just, you know, I'm glad it's in the past. I can only give this 1.5 flaming cells out of 5 for Ghost Rider issue 27. All right, gang, so moving on to the last review that we have this evening. This is Ghost Rider issue 27 from 1973, At the Mercy of the Manticore by Jim Shooter and artist Don Perlin. Johnny Blaze rides through the desert alone, having left his life in Los Angeles behind him after being exposed as the Ghost Rider to his friends and coworkers. While on the road and pondering where to go, he runs across another biker named Brahma Bill, and he strikes up a brief friendship before they part ways. Blaze stops at a service station to get his bike checked out and is directed towards a local dude ranch for repairs. At the dude ranch are Hawkeye and the Two-Gun Kid, who have been working there during a leave of absence from the Avengers. Blaze arrives on his motorcycle, with the Kid immediately strikes up a fascination about and invites Johnny to stay at the ranch while he does some repairs. The very next day, while Blaze is giving the Kid motorcycle lessons, they notice some movement atop a large peak, though Two-Gun states that it's impossible to climb. That night, Johnny goes to the peak as the Ghost Rider and rides up to the top, where he finds tracks that resemble large paw prints. At the ranch, Hawkeye has changed into his costume, of course, pondering on whether he should return to the Avengers or not. His room is attacked by a large cat-like creature that calls himself the Manticore, which knocks him unconscious and carries him away. Ghost Rider arrives and frees Two-Gun Kid from the wreckage of the room, and the cowboy is shaken by Blaze's appearance, despite having met him once before with the Champions. Ghost Rider swears to rescue Hawkeye and rides off, but Two-Gun decides to follow as well. In a canyon far away, an injured Hawkeye is told by the Manticore that he works for Brand Industries, who needs a dead Avenger for a scheme. Ghost Rider interrupts and battles the Manticore, but the fight is disrupted by the Two-Gun Kid, who is riding Blaze's motorcycle. Manticore grabs Two-Gun and threatens to kill him if Blaze doesn't surrender. Blaze intimidates the Manticore by bluffing him with his demonic persona, allowing Hawkeye time to hit him with an electronic arrow, knocking him unconscious. As Blaze transforms, he realizes that Hawkeye and Two-Gun were just as spooked by his bluff as the villain, and tries to assure him that he wasn't being serious. He notes that the Ghost Rider is his curse, and it will follow him no matter where he goes. And that's where this issue ends. By the way, that summary was brought to you by Wheels on Fire, the unofficial guide to the 70s Ghost Rider by Chris Munn as well. Yeah, so this one, guys, is definitely interesting. You know, I think there's a, you know, this is Jim Shooter's last book on the series. You know, Don Perlin did the art, is getting comfortable with the character at this stage. But this almost seems like this is one of the last times we see Johnny Blaze doing superheroic antics in his run, basically. You know, after this, he's going to be kind of a roaming nomad across the country, meeting kind of lower level villains and dealing with his curse, which is growing increasingly difficult to handle. So this is really this may have been just a bridge to get to another era of the character, But it lasts a whopping 35 issues, guys. You know, the Ghost Rider continues to be this kind of like, almost like a Bruce Banner from the 70s TV show of Hulk, where from town to town he goes through, meets some bad guys, beats them up, and then has to leave because this monster's overtaking his life. He doesn't really have a supporting cast anymore. That's the downside as well, moving on. But, you know, it's kind of sad seeing his life kind of be put behind him at this. And there's a great opening splash page. I know there's a recap here where they talk about the recent events, and he kind of is describing his feelings about what's happened in Ghost Rider issue 26 with Dr. Druid exposing him and all that stuff. The recap may not be needed, but I think some very good visuals here, and we see it from a slightly different perspective. You know, back then, it was in the midst of everything. We weren't sure what was going to happen. Now, his LA life is over. He's not going to be a stunt rider anymore for movies. He's not working with Stuntmaster. His relationship with Karen Page is over, with Roxanne is over. This is a whole new Blaze, and a lot more sad Blaze if you think about it, because he's much more lonely. He's dealing with his curse, and he's learning how vicious it is, and he has no one to talk to about it. He has no caretaker to talk to about it. Nobody that can come and help him deal with these issues. So this is really the last issue of an era, really, guys. We're going to kind of see him doing some superhero stuff and then moving on to much more serious kind of lonely part of his existence. It's interesting seeing his horrified friends, seeing how scared and sad they were to see what happened to them, and how they, someone that they knew and cared about so much, was actually a monster deep down. I love seeing their faces. Really good stuff there. Blaze pondering his predicament with his arms crossed while driving, doing stunts, was unintentionally hilarious. Maybe it was intentional. I don't know. But, you know, just imagining him depressed and thinking about how sad he is, and he's just, his arms are crossed, and he's driving through the desert, and he's doing flips and stuff. Contrast that with Ben Percy's Johnny Blaze, who's mopey and grumpy, and you know here Blaze is obviously a little younger, dealing with some of the same feelings, but he's still doing flips and stunts. You know, there's some joy in his life. He's not just depressed going from town to town. This is, you know, that's going to come later on, but he's still very good at what he does. He's still a great motorcycle rider, and he's not afraid to show the readers that he is one of the best in the world. When we see Matt Hawk, this is the two-gun kid, and Hawkeye, didn't realize Matt Hawk, Hawkeye, very interesting, kind of a comedy duo there. Now, they met Blaze before in Champions 11, I believe, but, you know, they seem just as surprised to see him here as well. So, I mean, that's kind of interesting, maybe kind of a continuity issue, but they're pretty good here. I actually enjoy the interactions with Blaze here. You know, that's not bad. You know, I like seeing them talk, especially with Two Gun Kid's backstory. He's from the 1800s and kind of brought to the present. Totally confused what's going on in the present. So definitely fish out of water there. And the fact that he loves his bike, is fascinated with Blaze's bike, is just really, really hilarious. Real hilarious. The Ghost Rider itself looks really great. I mean, there's even a part where the horse gets spooked and stuff like that, but the Ghost Rider itself looks great, especially the transformation back to Blaze. Like at the end, for example, when his friends are scared, that's good stuff, guys. You know, when even all his friends don't trust him anymore, and people that he's known for a time are scared of him, almost as much as the villain as well. That really kind of sets up the coming issues, like the coming 35 issues, really, of his journey by himself, basically, and having no long-term friendships. Even Roxanne is out of his life at this point. You know, she's hurt. She moved on to someone else. So, and I don't blame her. I mean, if I were her, I would not want to be around him either. You know, he's definitely damaged goods at this stage of his life, you know. Going back to some things I didn't like about it, you know, there's a few things. The monologue is unintentionally funny, bemoaning his fate, but also doing flippy stunts. You know, I simultaneously love that, but I also think it's cheesy as well. But, you know, there's a line here that always makes me laugh. You know, morning turkey, eat my dust. You know, adios, hot dog. The problem with Bill is hilarious. What a great character that character is. And honestly, seeing his face, I can't help but to hear his spoken words as the Macho Man Randy Savage. So, you know, when I'm reading that, it just makes me laugh even more. You know, adios, hot dog. You know, that kind of stuff. Really great stuff there. So, oh yeah. I find it interesting that Blaze transforms to Ghost Rider just to clear his head at this stage. You know, it's almost like, I need to go for a ride. I'm going to transform to the Spirit of Vengeance. Really fascinating stuff here, guys. I mean, this is, it's almost like putting on a new pair of shoes or a new outfit. He's like just flaming on so he can do more dangerous stunts without the fear of getting hurt as much. A far cry from what's going to become of him not too far from now, where he's going to start struggling with that internal entity, where the rider wants to come out and he doesn't want the rider to come out. And it's this internal issue. Here, it's almost like, oh, I'm going to transform because I just want to clear my head and have some fun. And we've seen that earlier in this run as well, where he transformed into the Spirit of Vengeance, not really knowing what it was. It was kind of an untapped power at the time. You know, it's almost like flaming on, like I said, to the Human Torch. Very, very similar to that. Later on, it's going to be much different. Obviously, he's going to be really fighting that demon, literally. I mean, there's some issue covers where they have a battle of strength, right? Battle of wills right on the cover there. So here he's just willy-nilly turning on his flame powers. So people just put on their costumes whenever they want in this issue, like Clint Barton. You know, they just like, oh, I'm just trying on my clothes and stuff like that. So almost anticipating a battle to be happening soon, you know, because it wouldn't be the same if he was just dressed like a normal civilian. But and that's like a little bit cheesy, but not too bad here. The Manticore. Listen, I can't talk about this issue without talking about the Manticore. Is he bad? Is he good? Is he so bad? He's good. That's up to you guys. You know, you write to me. You let me know how much you like or dislike Manticore. I think he's kind of a silly villain. He's an amputee in a lion suit with a scorpion tail. But he's not as bad as I was expecting him to be. You know, he's actually kind of interesting in some ways. So he's much more in line with like the Champions kind of villains than what Blaze is going to be fighting in the future. And I'm a big fan of supervillains anyway with comic books. But, you know, don't get too used to seeing Blaze battle monsters and mech suits. This is going to be the last for a while, guys, for a couple years. So, you know, get your fix now. But I didn't mind him too much. I know a lot of fans hate him. But, yeah, if you guys have a feeling, write to me in the show at InnerDemonsGR on Twitter. Let me know, Manticore, good or bad, or both. You let me know, guys. So, overall, this is a pretty fun issue. Obviously, this was Shooter's last issue in the series. Trying to set up something in the future, and the direction sort of changed from there. So, I have to give this 3.5 Flaming Skulls out of 5 for the 70s issue of Ghost Rider issue 27. All right, guys, so before I say goodbye for the night, I want to read some hashtag PostWritersGR from you great listeners and readers out there. If you guys don't know what it is, if you want to submit some of your reviews for an upcoming episode, you simply go on Twitter and use the hashtag PostWritersGR, which helps me to find it much easier, and you send in your thoughts, short thoughts for the upcoming reviews that we're doing. And in a way, you guys are sort of like the co-host for the program as well. It's tough to do a show by yourself. I sort of just feel like I'm talking into a mirror or into an echo chamber. So hearing you guys' feedback, either in voicemails or via tweets or emails, that stuff is absolutely amazing. So keep that stuff coming. So we have some really great PostWriters GR reviews I'm going to get to right now. The first is by our Punisher superfan named Rook. He sent me his thoughts on the Cosmic Ghost Rider issues 1 and 2. He says the following. For the main story, I'm digging the Old West undertones. The retired gunslinger, not sure what to call him, maybe like the old saying about Jonah Hex, where Jonah Hex was a hero to some, but a villain to others, and wherever he rode, people spoke his name in whispers. Wherever he was, now that he's just tired. As usual, these types of characters never get to rest and only endanger those around them, as there is inevitably someone looking to remind him of his past. Enter the man in black, so to speak, Kral Dravid, reminding Frank of his past deeds. I think I was surprised as Frank was with how that turned out. Has Frank gotten too slow, or has he lost the will to fight? I wonder if this is related to the weakened rider we see in issue number 2. Maybe Frank has, quote-unquote, lost his touch. At this point, it's too early to tell what's happening with his dreams. Are we seeing a vision of the past, or is this a variant on a mission across timelines? One thing we learn is that there are a lot of people afraid of the Cosmic Ghost Rider, and a lot of money going around to bring him in. But which Cosmic Ghost Rider we've yet to clear up? The Western theme continues as Frank helps Axel to find a place to lay low. Immediately, I saw his bike standing in for the saddled steed he still rides, keeping one foot into the past. Looking forward to seeing more Frank and this Star Stalker bounty hunter hired to bring him in. I expect we'll see those two together a little longer, as well as who this other writer is. Also, I'm excited for more Cosmic Ghost Rider stories. What a fun concept, and I love the short stories that's at the end. It's great when you get to see so much of a character in such a short amount of panels. Typical Frank, he has no regrets and knows he's doomed to bear the burden of actions, good or bad. As usual, the visuals of the Cosmic Ghost Rider are just epic. You can't not shell out extra cash for these variant covers. My favorite is the Punisher number one cover homage from the 1986 miniseries. I really appreciate that, Rook. Moving on to @SoFloPirates, Ghost Rider issue 11 by Ben Percy. He says, I've been pretty sour on this series from the beginning, and issue 11 doesn't really deter me from that feeling. To start, we get a breath of fresh air with new art from guest artist Dave Wachter. His pencils and inks are much cleaner than Corey Smith's. We get but a few pages in until Talia, Johnny's partner and love interest, literally puts a knife to his chin because he was asking her a few questions. What the hell? Not only that, but are we having Talia going Tyson and Holyfield not once but twice in the same issue? It just throws me off. And Johnny's reactions? It just doesn't seem like Johnny here, which is probably my biggest hang-up over the series. No one is acting like themselves. Not Johnny, not Danny Ketch, etc. It's like the characters are stuck in a vice grip. The story itself is fine. I like the idea of a demon hunting around the U.S., but we're still not done with Exhaust, apparently. And spent more time in art showing a final interaction with the bike than we did with the actual Exhaust character. The Bjorn Behrens cover is also really nice, so there's that. About Ghost Rider issue 12. Corey Smith is back and Savannah is a war zone. Smith's pencils seem a bit cleaner this issue. Besides some of the hokey dialogue in this comic, I did enjoy seeing Ghost Rider pick up the cross and turn it into a flaming hell sword. This issue was a bit more fun, with Talia only using a knife on Johnny once this issue, so there's improvement there. I did like the splash page of Barton and Roxanne, and the issue ended on a nice cliffhanger. At this point, I'm fully convinced I'm buying the series out of obligation as opposed to actual enjoyment. But this was definitely one of the more enjoyable issues from the series, so maybe that's a sign of things to come. I did just finish reading issue 15, however, but I'll save those thoughts for a later time. And I'll agree for the most part that this run has elements in it that make it one of the defining runs of Ghost Rider history, but it has too many things going against it. Number one, things happening off-panel, inexcusable, like was said on the podcast with Exhaust. Number two, the art can be absolutely downright confusing at best and terrible at worst, muddy colors, inking, and so on. Number three, Johnny Blaze seems so out of character here. He is basically a step stool to Talia, who essentially abuses him constantly, and he just sort of takes it. Yeah, I'm not happy with that. But I'm a schmuck who will keep it in my pull box because it's Ghost Rider. Nothing else to it, really. Percy hasn't impressed me on X-Force or Wolverine either, and I have similar feelings toward him on his Ghost Rider run. A few bite spots, though. Thank you very much, @SoFloPirate. Much appreciated there. All right, so now we have one of our OG listeners, Brandon, @BrandoCereal, has some thoughts on some of the issues we did tonight. Starting with Ghost Rider issue 27 from the 70s. Ghost Rider teams up with Hawkeye and Two-Gun Kid against Manticore, Blaze's first putting in the desert since being exiled from L.A. Blaze feels free, but trouble always seems to find him and those closest to him. The story is a fine transition from last issue, where Blaze has lost it all, and even finding familiar company with Hawkeye and Two-Gun. He ends up being the loner that he meditates on about in the middle of the issue. Almost like a setup for a deepening character arc later on. Perlin aces the art like nobody's business. His background scenes are gorgeous to look at. The details him and Green apply stand out. They both know how to make Ghost Rider menacing, and his fight with Manticore is fun to watch. This comic feels forgettable, though. The connection between Blaze and the Avengers doesn't feel fleshed out completely. Not a lot of dialogue between Blaze and Hawkeye. The Avengers don't imply that they had history with Manticore, but it feels like a strict Avengers problem. A problem that they could do without Blaze. Yet Blaze saved the damsels that fired between one or two shots, while Ghost Rider did all the busy work. Forgettable, yet odd. Overall, a decent issue. The art stands out, but the comic as a whole is forgettable. 3.5 flaming skulls out of 5. He also sent in a review for Ghost Rider issue 27 from 2009. Last issue, I said it was nostalgia bait. This is where Aaron yanks you out of the water to something you don't expect. There's a panel of Blaze spewing out deep Ghost Rider lore the fans want to know about Caretaker, but it's like, nah, no time for that. Caretaker's arc sits strangely with me. I'm not deep into the 90s series, but his epilogue felt the character deconstructed. Although he brought up Sarah on this issue, his appearance felt he needed to go. Sarah was introduced well here. Training, loss, mission, responsibility. Hua's art looks more rusty in this issue than the story. He still captures tasteful detail, but his facial expressions and poses get more awkward to look at. Blackout dropping the tombstone on Blaze and Sarah's vision are the two best panels in this whole issue. The arc could have been a three-parter. I get that it's an intro to The Last Stand and Aaron had a limited contract, but there was a means to explore some more Ghost Rider lore and have that extended fight between Blackout and Blaze. 3 flaming skulls out of 5. Probably my favorite cover of this run as well. He also sent in a review of Ghost Rider issue 11 from this past year. The issue is a psychological unpacking. First of all, the cover is false advertising. Not a lick of Danny Ketch in this issue. This issue is an interesting dive into how long Blaze sees himself, how low Blaze sees himself, and how he stays attached to his tendencies. It has an interesting premise, though, and it's a weird continuation of how we don't see Blaze and Talia ended Exhaust. Because he is part of Blaze, they reduce him into a bike. That's weird. Although it's a Blaze story, why didn't Ghost Rider have a problem with Blaze keeping the bike like Talia? There's a lot of desire to fully explore Blaze as a character, but Ghost Rider is definitely taking a backseat in this issue. Percy seems to be distorting the balance and dynamic of how Blaze and Ghost Rider depend on each other. Yet, we're not given insight into Ghost Rider's position in this run. Dave Walker's art fares well in this comic. He gets the job done. The double montage page shows he's capable of drawing solid action scenes featuring the Ghost Rider. Kind of a robbery we don't see more of there. I don't mind the doom and gloom of this run. It draws from Blaze's perspective. It's very subjective, and I do appreciate Percy handling Blaze on a psychological level. I suppose he's channeling Carl Jung's work in some of these issues. 3.5 flaming skulls out of 5. Last but not least, he sent in a review of Ghost Rider issue 12. He says it's the best Ghost Rider issue in a minute. The Ghost Rider is more present here, Brandon says. And he neutralizes cops, steals their car, fights the demon and zombies with a cross sword. Talia displays a badass blood spell. The story is an imposter story with a strong start. This is some callback to last issue where the demon declares Blaze Ghost Rider more evil than Hell's Worst, though not him. When Blaze was holding onto Exhaust to keep his ugliness near him, the issue seems to transition from that, which is nice. Smith's artwork is fantastic here. It looks like he gets to let loose with the Ghost Rider action scenes. Ketch's Rider, designed brutally badass on the final page. Percy tightens it down. He gives Ghost Rider simple and stoical lines. His dialogue with the cross is the highlight for me. Straightforward, to the point, highly detailed, and delivers on some much-needed action. 5 out of 5 flaming skulls. Thank you so much, Brandon, and thank you to everybody who listens and goes to the extra step of sending in some thoughts on the issues we're doing. I really can't do this show without you guys. It's not fun doing that. I love hearing what your opinions are, how they're different, how they're similar. Ghost Rider is such a fascinating character, has a 50-year history, and each of us have come to the character at a different era, a different stage. Some people have come at the start of the Percy run. Some people are OGs from the very original Marvel Spotlight number 5. So hearing you guys' opinions on these issues really invigorates the program, the podcast, and I just love hearing it. So if you can, drop a comment, you know, about some upcoming issues, and I'd love to read it on the show. Same thing with voicemails as well. So everybody who does that is a hero in my book. So thank you guys for that. That is all for tonight, guys. Thank you so, so much for staying tuned as long as you have. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we're going to be having a great, fantastic episode coming up. So stay tuned for that, and I will look forward to seeing you then. Take care, guys, and ride on.